Welcome to this evening's meeting of the Finance and Facilities Committee, May 6, 2011, 6 p.m. here at Central Services Office. The first order of business this evening will be the review and approval of minutes from the April 4, 2011 meeting. Would you please take a moment and review those minutes, please? Okay, then the first order of business on the agenda this evening will be the Finance Committee calendar for meetings for 2011 and 12. These will follow the same pattern as board meetings and as we have done previously, and that is that we'll start at 6 p.m. here, either here or at the buildings, and then conclude just prior to the beginning of a board meeting. So this was more for informational purposes, and I'll move on to...
Is it pretty much one every meeting?
It is every prior to every board meeting, every regularly scheduled board meeting. And we generally go for an hour and 15 minutes to or longer. We usually don't have much time between the Finance Committee and the board meeting. Okay, then the third item of the agenda this evening will be the supplemental pay recommendations. And Lori Campbell will be making that presentation.
This is an informational piece that will be coming to the board on June 6th. The supplemental pay committee is made up of Gia and Erica Sutton from the board perspective, so do I, so does Chris Granda. The purpose of the group is to review on a regular basis activities presented for supplemental pay, which would mean clubs, athletics, any other activities for the kids after school for which a teacher would receive an additional stipend. The group meets, like I said, on a regular basis to review what's active, what's not active. There's language in our contract that says after 2 years we'll sunset or end activities, but this group needs to talk about any new activities that might be coming on. So in your report, you'll see that there are three new activities, and though it's not necessarily new, but kind of expanded activities that we'd like to recommend. First of all, is a sixth grade jazz band. Our jazz band has really taken off this year. Their concert was last Thursday, and I heard that with rave reviews. Under the direction of Mr. Jim DiPaolo, our current band director, the enrollment and participation in that has just blossomed. We have more kids involved than ever before, and he anticipates that the same number of kids who are currently in 6th and 7th grade will continue into 7th and 8th grade, with more even joining in. The nature of a jazz band, as you know, is you can't have 200 kids in a jazz band. It's a smaller group. It's more of an ensemble type of format. He'd like to expand it to 6th grade so that the kids can then be ready for 7th and 8th grade, and also so he doesn't have to turn away, quite frankly, any students into the jazz band because they're 6th graders, anybody who might be interested. So that's one of the stipends that's being requested. The second is 6th grade cross country. Our conference previously has limited cross country participation to just 7th and 8th graders. This is a no-cut sport. It takes place in the fall. It's a great activity for kids, I think, personally, a 6th grader coming into Hadley. Great way to get involved in something that you're not going to be cut from, and a nice introduction into Hadley. So with the conference adding 6th grade, we will need an additional sponsor for that. Part of the whole look at 6th grade cross country is once the kids come in, if we have 150 6th graders who sign up for cross country, we may be back to you asking for another sponsor or supervisor, but right now we think, you know, starting with one is the right place to be. And then the third activity is Dare to Dream, which I know those of you who have been on the board for several years did see the this particular club come in and present a few years ago. It is aimed at bringing in our Hispanic students. It was primarily designed to work or to bring our females in and get them engaged in the school, but also show them about the possibilities of continuing their education beyond just high school, with one of the culminating activities being attending a conference, a Dare to Dream conference. And there's a translation into Spanish that I will butcher, so I'm not going to say it. But that that conference is for the girls and their mothers to attend, again, to look at the potential of future education. The club has really taken off and gained in popularity, so much that they'd like to include males in it, too, and really open it up and engage as many of the kids from that particular group as possible. So an additional stipend is being requested there. So that's on the add-end. On the takeaway end, we have had the Steppers Club, which has not been active for 2 years, so we would like to subset that activity. Our environmental club, we still have it, but we have two stipends set aside for that. We've just used one for the last few years based on the number of kids involved, so that would be one that would be sunsetting or ending. So the net increase would be $675.
So there still is a environmental club, you
yes,
say?
There is.
But there was two stipends?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Can just to educate me a little bit on how the steps work on these, so it's not how they work for the teachers. So you're saying like if a club ran for 3 years, then the teachers would be paid at the step three stipend?
Correct. If they've been in that particular position for 3 years, if the teacher's been the sponsor. So it runs exactly like the teacher salary schedule.
Okay. But it doesn't match, the step numbers don't match to whatever step they're in.
No, it doesn't match their lane and step based on their regular contract. It's just in that particular supplemental paid sponsorship activity.
And there's only four steps.
Right. Correct.
Mm-hmm. And then the, just for example, I was trying to understand the jazz band that said $675.
Mm-hmm.
But I see $675 for...
Oh, I must have a typo on there. You're right. There's not a match there.
Should be $670.
I have to look on the contract to see if it's 670 or 675. It's one of the two.
Oh, okay.
But I will make that correction. Thank you. And I didn't catch that.
So step one. Okay.
Right. I don't have the contract in front of me.
Yeah.
It is within $5. I'll be corrected.
That's amazing that you got 44 students. Because when I was in high school, jazz band, 20 or something. I remember even jazz combos being smaller, like half a dozen.
Right. It's a good problem to have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, the jazz band sits on the 8th graders. And pretty much any instrument that wants to be in the last few years.
Yeah, this year he actually rewrote music so that flutes and clarinets could participate. He talked about that. In fact, Steve's daughter Katie had a solo. So.
Thanks to the movie Anchorman, jazz flute.
Yeah.
Ron Burgundy.
How many kids are in cross country?
Currently, there are 80 in cross. Or this last year, there were 80 in cross country and 7th and 8th grade. But it's never been open to 6th graders before. So that's new this fall.
And Dare to Dream.
We talked about this city meeting. Hold on. I want to say there are 35 different languages.
Yeah, there are 35, and last year when they came to present to the board, there were I think 4 or 5. Boys also who attended. They didn't attend the conference because that's still a mother-daughter centric activity, but the sponsors of the club want to encourage, from a cultural perspective, conversation around pursuing your education beyond high school, and that's both a male and female conversation, especially culturally, so that's part of the intention behind wanting to encourage the boys to be involved too.
They'd included the boys last year in their college visits, I think.
And really engaging.
Yeah.
And when a child enrolls in one of these, do they pay the activity fee?
There's an activity fee.
Okay. So it's like 1, 2, and once you get above a certain amount.
There's a couple levels to it.
Okay.
Thank you, Erica. Dan, on the first page, that should say 675 instead of 670. So the numbers on the second page
are correct.
Are correct, and it's just that first page where it shows the stuff.
Okay, thank you.
I don't make the correction in the final.
Any other questions?
Nope. Thanks, Lauren.
Then the next order of business this evening will be the furniture bid results for 2011. As you know, the administration created a capital projects plan, and as part of that, an age and obsolescence plan a number of years ago. We use this to guide our expenditures on an annual basis and also to provide more of an even stream of expenditures throughout the years instead of having to spend high 1 year and low the next. So this allows us to smooth out those expenditure levels. On April 7th, we went to bid with the school furniture packet. On April 21st, that was returned here to the district offices. 15 bid packets were released and 8 were returned. There is a spreadsheet as part of the second page of this presentation, and I'll just provide you with some of the highlights of that. I would like to just mention that most of the items that are listed on the spreadsheet for inclusion in the age and obsolescence replacement plan are due to the age of the particular furniture items that are that we're looking to replace, and also some, if not most of them, are now becoming safety hazards due to cracking of furniture, breaking, whatever the case may be. So this isn't just because of the aging equipment, but also the fact that it's becoming a safety hazard. We're looking to replace approximately 50 student desks and chairs. This will be done at the elementary school level. And again, this is as a result. First of all, we've had some bubbles in different classrooms where we've needed furniture in one particular class versus another, in one building versus another. Also, we've had complaints from Franklin and Churchill, and to a lesser degree at Forest Glen and Lincoln with regards to broken equipment. A number of years ago, we had some, we had a little inventory at Churchill that has been filtered throughout the district. So now we're just looking to purchase some extras for current replacement, as well as to have a little inventory. Mm-hmm. Typically, we get these requests at the last minute where, I know Scott last year called for 10 extra desks, and maybe Kurt called for 8 or 10 extra desks and chairs. So again, this will be for replacement and then to build a little bit of inventory for ourselves. The next item here is the 280 student desk and chairs that will be used at Hadley. This is a continued rollout of the standardized classroom plan that we put in place 3 years ago. So I believe this is now the third year of implementation. We annually do 8 to 9 classrooms per year. And so I believe by next year or the year after, we will have full implementation of the new student desk and chairs at the Hadley Junior High. Next order, next item on the agenda here is the one of the 150, actually it would be 150 of two different colors, so a total request for 300 for the replacement of 300 stackable chairs. Those are the orange ones and putty color ones that you see scattered throughout Hadley. You ever sat in them? I've had calls from parents. They sat down on a plane, they pinched their legs, and they snagged a skirt or a pair of slacks or whatever the case may be. Again, this would be just continued rollout of, this would be for replacement, both because of the age and the safety issues that we're currently having with cracking seats and bases. And then finally, when I say finally, there are a number of items that are listed on the spreadsheet, but these are the 4 high-ticket items. The next one is the wall pocket cafeteria tables. This has been on the list, the age and obsolescence list now, both for Churchill and Franklin for about 4 years. We reviewed both of the assemblies that exist at each of these schools. We feel as though Churchill is the most appropriate for replacement at this time, whereas we'll look for replacement next year at Franklin. We have had a number of breakage issues, a number of safety issues, trying to get replacement parts for items that are 10 or 12 years old. It's not that easy. It's just not that easy for us to acquire these particular replacement parts that we may need. So, what's the total cost to the district? The total cost for the furniture table, for the furniture without the cafeteria tables, is $49,722. In addition, we're looking for replacement of the wall pocket cafeteria table. The lowest bid came in at approximately $7,500. There'll be 6 sets, I believe 6 sets that will need to be included in this purchase. So the total cost of the cafeteria table is $45,175. In total, the cost for furniture replacement for this year would be $94,897. We would be looking for the Finance and Facilities Committee to support this recommendation, and we'll be bringing this to the board on June 6th for discussion and June 20th for action. Are there any questions?
Bob, the wall pocket, those are the tables that come out and then go back up into the wall.
They come out.
Multi-purpose room.
Yeah, they come out. There's 3 tables. there's three sections of tables that sit in each pocket. They've been there for about 12 years. I believe they were put in, installed after the last referendum, and they get a lot of use. I will tell you that a lot of the use was as a result of outside groups using our facilities, and these items were mistreated, were broken. You know, and I don't know that it was ever done intentionally, but rather they were just being used so frequently. Mm-hmm. So a couple of years ago, as a result of the excess use and the breakage, we don't allow outside groups to pull those cafeteria tables out any longer unless we're there to do it for them.
Bob?
Yes?
I got really two questions. You said it looks like all of this is 10 to 12 years old.
All of it's in a 10 to 12-year-old variety, yes.
Okay. What is the average useful life of this equipment?
I'm going to say 10 to 12 years old,
okay.
Just to give you an example.
We'll hope for something different, but that's okay.
Well, I'll just give you an example. As we did some checking today, actually Carolyn did. The new cafeteria tables that we're having, that we look to acquire, have a 15-year warranty. So any issues that come up within the next 15 years, we will hold them to the responsibility to maintain those tables, which we haven't done previously. Mm-hmm. So now
so we didn't have a warrant. There wasn't a warranty that went with these other ones?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
You
all
came
of
in,
I know,
yeah.
Yeah, you know, I've been here 4 years. I've had this asked of me each year for the past 4 years. And each year we have more and more difficulties. Sometimes some injuries with them or accidents that occur with them. So if there was a year to begin to roll out the replacement of the cafeteria tables, I thought it would be wise to start this year. And again, I would bring a recommendation for replacement at Churchill this year and then at Franklin as we look forward next year.
Mm-hmm. So the other buildings have similar age with the cafeteria equipment?
Yes. So
they were different brands when they built in 97. They used different brands at each building.
Okay.
And I don't believe the corresponding has any in the wall.
I don't think you're right.
They used freestanding folding tables. Well, they pulled up. But at Lincoln, it's a different brand.
Of course, when they wheel them in and out of the, there's a store over there, I believe a large gym, so they just pull them out. I believe, as Phyllis indicated, the three elementary schools exclusive of Forest Glen have these wall-mounted, they call them pocket-type.
So Lincoln and Ben Franklin are the other two. Hadley doesn't have this.
No,
they have, in the cafeteria, they have tables that sit out, I believe they're double-expanding, sort of cafeteria tables. They fold up, and they stay out all the time, unless the area is cleared for a particular function. Mm-hmm. The biggest problem we have with this equipment is up and down, and generally if you don't have experienced people using it, you're going to have some problems.
Is all this equipment is currently listed on the schedule of the agent obsolescence plan? So next year, the other, it's Ben Franklin or Lincoln, are scheduled to have that replacement.
That is correct.
Okay. So this is nothing new. This is just following the agent obsolescence plan that's already in place.
That's correct. The agent obsolescence plan, the plan that we put together regarding standardized classrooms, which I think is important to get out there, that this is all part of a long-term plan that's been in effect now really for 3 to 4 years. Mm-hmm. And it was brought about to bring standardization instead of allowing each building or each classroom to look a little bit differently. We wanted to come up with a set plan.
And does it now, or are we close?
I would say we're getting there.
Okay.
We're getting there. Now at Hadley, this is the third year of the plan. Next year, the year after, we're done as we know it as a standardized classroom. Now, there's other things we may want to introduce it, but as we've created the plan now, this should be fully implemented in a year or two.
What is this, what's your budget? Is this under O&M?
This will come out of the O&M budget, correct.
Do we have broken down detail of that like we do the other categories?
Well, you have capital purchases in the O&M fund, and the amount that I've budgeted for replacement is about $135,000 this year.
But is that in this budget?
It is in that budget, correct.
I mean, is it that detailed?
Not on what you see. Phyllis and I maintain in our Skyward system, maintain line by line detailed budget items, and is included in those. We have probably 1,000, 1,500, 2,000 lines of expenditures, and it's maintained in it to that level of detail where we are itemize capital expenditures or the replacement of building equipment, furniture, and fixtures at all the way down to the building level.
I guess that would be helpful. You know, we have a level, large level of detail on all the other items, and that's the one that, you know, just has like a one-liner. It would be helpful if there were some subcategories or some way to...
How much?
We did the budget discussion again.
Could you say all the others have more detail when you're referencing...
Personnel costs, you mean?
No, like... Right.
No, no, just, you know, like if you look at...
Well, you have a budget in the back of your book here,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you could tell me where you're looking, we could talk
about
it. The O&M fund is on page 6.
Right.
And there's only one function of the O&M. That's why it's in that manner. That's the way the state has it reported. Versus when you get into special ed, we have multiple functions. You know, so this is mirroring how we report the state.
But like in O&M, you have some other general subcategories.
Well, you do. You have purchase services, supplies and materials, equipment, and then other objects within the operation and maintenance fund. And those are the totals that would make up sort of the total of expected expenditures of $3.2 million in the O&M fund.
Is your question, Dan, about wanting to know that there's dollars budgeted specifically for this type of replacement?
Well, yeah, I'm just trying to understand where that all fits in. You know, like anytime I see an expenditure request, you know, I know we link it back to the long-range plan, but mm-hmm. I'm always trying to figure out where does it fit into the budget.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to understand what are one-time occurrence items versus recurring items.
Mm-hmm. Well, anything, correct me if I'm wrong, but anything that's in the A&O area, Asian obsolescence, is built as part of this implementation plan of replacement furniture other items that are on a cycle, right?
I budget so much per year, X number of dollars per year for replacement
right.
of furniture in the building.
Plans and that capital,
it's also part of the capital projects that we presented, right. Any number of items.
They're not broken down on this date.
mm-hmm. Right, I understand these are state documents. I guess I'm just looking for something to provide.
So, Dan, when you said things, you'd like to know how things are, where they're budgeted.
Right.
Like, so, I mean, we don't present, as Bob said, a 1,500 line item.
Let's see.
That's part of our working document. But if you would want to know, you're asking a question, I think, that says, okay, if it comes out of our O&M, our agent obsolescence plan, from what do we budget each year for that?
Yes.
Like we capital projects, we say every year we're going to budget this much.
Right.
So is that kind of the big picture?
That, that detail that kind of says, you know, this is how much we, because I think you do this every year, right?
Yeah.
I was asking for,
you see it every year about this time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just trying to see where that fits in. You know, is this part of the normal? Do we have a bump because we got to get these tables? I mean, Drew was kind of hitting on, do we have to worry about some of these other schools? Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to understand.
Now, as I've said, this is part of the long-term agent obsolescence plan, and I try to budget X number of dollars per year. As I said, I'm bringing you a recommendation this evening for about $94,000. I believe I have $135,000 in that particular account spread amongst all the buildings.
Mm-hmm. For replacement.
Yeah, and there may be other things that we find we have to replace that are not in this particular.
Absolutely.
Would it be helpful if every year we presented our agent obsolescence plan to you at this time of the year so you can see prior to the budget what we're looking at for the following fiscal year for that particular time, and because we do operate really on four long-range plans.
Mm-hmm.
The long-range plan, a big long-range plan, the technology long-range plan, the capital long-range plan, and the agent obsolescence plan, well, really five, and the curriculum cycle, curriculum review cycle. So those are all linked back to the long-range plan, but those are our, you know, particular drivers in terms of budget development. So,
and it was my intention to probably after I find out what committee assignments are, mm-hmm. I would think that I was would hope to meet with the finance committee or the chairman of the finance committee. And one of my recommendations was that I would present the capital projects plan and agent obsolescence plan at the June 20th meeting, mm-hmm. as part of the finance agenda.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I'm in the process of updating that. It's a document that I use daily, weekly, mm-hmm. whenever I need to refer to it. But my thought was that I would bring it to present it at the finance committee on June 20th, mm-hmm. or that second meeting in June.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Dan, I think what you're looking for is a tie back from the budget to this request through the agent obsolescence plan. Is that something that does tie back, Bob?
Well, as I've said, I budget X number of dollars a year for furniture purchases. So okay. Yes, it does tie back.
Okay. So I guess that might be helpful, don't you think, Dan? If we could tie the budget back to the request.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, implicit in an agent obsolescence is that you forecasted ahead anyway. We know that we have functional pieces that students have to have, desks, chairs, etc., right? So when I saw the agent obsolescence plan, or we see it every year, what it says to me is that part of their working document is also forecasting year to year on year what we're going to need, which is how you come up with $135,000. You may or may not use all of that.
I may or may not.
Right. You may go above it, and then it comes back to finance to say, we had a blip in the screen, we have 7 foot tall fifth graders, and we need bigger desks or whatever.
Whatever that case may be.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, there's a forecasting piece here, too, so that isn't not just a number you're pulling out of the head. It's part of building your A&O so that you know what's coming down the pipe, so that finance can know and have a better sense of it. Yeah.
But I think being able to tie it back, tie the agent obsolescence plan to the budget piece, I think would be clear, and I think that would probably answer Dan's question. So that gets to be something that we'd like to see.
I have a functional question. Are we replacing, you know, these orange pod type of chairs in the auditorium? Are we replacing with the same ones?
No, we're not replacing those. That is, again, part of the long-term capital projects plan, agent obsolescence. My thought is that I'll bring a recommendation either next year or the year after to the board for replacement of the chairs that are in the the Hadley stage area.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to bring it this year because that whole room is going to need some work. So we're going to be looking. I've included money for this in this year's budget to make improvements to the lighting, to the sound in that area. Mm-hmm. Next year I'll budget money to improve sound lighting in that area. And then next year or the year after, I'll bring a plan to sort of reconstruct or reconfigure that seating arrangement. It may end up being pretty close to what it is now, mm-hmm. but I think we need time to work on mm-hmm. it. I did get a request from the building. I told them that it's an agent obsolescence plan, and that we'll be looking towards replacing it the next year or two. But I just didn't think the time was right now mm-hmm. to do that.
But so these 300 stackable chairs are not going into the pods at Hadley?
No.
Oh, where are they going? To the elementary buildings?
No, they're going to the pods and other areas that are needed throughout the building. They're not to be affixed as when you walk into the auditorium, they have chairs that are affixed to the floor.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
Those.
No, we're talking about the stackable ones that
they're
are so uncomfortable.
Yes.
The question was, are we replacing those really uncomfortable chairs with the same uncomfortable chairs?
I went to school there 35 years ago.
Yeah, those chairs haven't changed. I remember those. From
and that would be the question.
Well,
maybe they make them better now.
Yeah, landfill, they'll never break down.
Unless someone says finish, yeah.
No, I get, well, and it's an issue of continuity. You can't replace 150 or 300 chairs and have whatever's in there. I mean, I get that.
These are the stacked chairs.
Yeah.
When I was referring to long-term, the chairs that are fixed.
Right. That are not mobile, yes. Yeah. No. Portable. Yeah.
So there's a plan.
Oh, no,
for
these were talking about stackable chairs.
Sorry, Bob. This is teasing me.
Okay. Any other questions on furniture?
Yeah.
And Dan, I'll work on answering your question a little bit better and try to tie it in next time to the board report. I don't know exactly how that'll look yet, but I'll do what I can for you. And, you know, like I said, if anybody ever has any questions on something that I bring for a recommendation, please give me a call. You know, you can talk about it on the phone. You can stop in, whatever, and we can go over whatever it is. Or however I need to address your concerns.
I think it's a great idea, like you're saying, for orientation for the changes to put that back on the table. So it's,
well, we have a new board member. Sam has not seen it yet. The other board members have seen it. We did it last year. Mm-hmm. Drew and Bob have seen it, and Steve and so forth, Erica.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll bring it back on June 20th. We'll have it updated, and we'll present the capital project long term, and we'll take a look at the A&O plan. Okay. Any other questions? All right, then the next order of business this evening is the student information software replacement. And Mike Wood, you're up.
This recommendation is to replace our existing student information system software, which is a service. It's put out by a company called MIG, Management Information Group. Software, and the student information software is kind of the core component, the core system that we use for collecting student data as well as distributing student data. So it's responsible for things like student attendance, state reporting, scheduling at all the buildings, as well as feeding other systems like our data warehouse or our gradebook software. So it's a really critical component to our network and to how we collect and distribute data. We've been using CERS for about the last 3 years, maybe a little bit more than 3 years now. The software package was purchased by a previous administration, and over the last several years, as we have grown and we have developed and changed, the software has not really been flexible enough to make those changes and adjustments with us. So it's really kind of holding us back at this point from being able to do a lot of the things that we like to do with data, as well as how we share it and how we distribute it. So also over the last several years, we've had some support issues with the company. The company has gone through some changes as well. They were bought out by another company, Stardyne, purchased them last year. So given that we just can't see how we can move forward with this product and do the things that we need to do with the data, we started to look at other solutions, other options for our student information system. So this past year, we looked at a bunch of different products that are available. We pretty much landed on three that we wanted to bring in, have them demo their software, and take a deeper look at. And those were Skyward, PowerSchool, and Pinnacle Student Information System. Also collecting a lot of data from other surrounding districts, what kind of software they're using, what their experience has been with it. So we kind of narrowed it down to PowerSchool and Skyward. And both products have pretty much the lion's share of the market here in Illinois. They've got a long history with school districts in Illinois. Most of the feedback I had gotten from other school districts was very positive. We actually had both vendors come out and demo their products a couple times. Particularly look at the schedule, because that was kind of a linchpin with CERS and some of the issues that we had with that product, just to see that it would fit, particularly at Hadley, the way we need the schedule. So moving forward, we kind of came down to both products really were very good products, and I think would probably fit our needs for the most part in allowing us to consolidate a lot of services that we can't do currently, things like the schedule. Or even potentially the gradebook down the road, whether or not we can incorporate that in. So we're really looking to consolidate everything into a single platform. Our recommendation is to go with Skyward. The cost for both products is pretty even. I think over a three-year period, it was about an $8 difference in cost. Mm-hmm. But with Skyward, it's a company that we're familiar with. We've worked with for the last couple of years with our finance system. Implementation went very smooth. Support has been outstanding. And the product has been rock solid for us for these last couple of years. And what it would also allow us to do is begin to cluster and consolidate some of the software that we have currently. It would bring both our student information system and our finance system under one platform. Also bring us to a single server, which would allow us to eliminate two or three additional servers we currently have to house because we've got different systems. Mm-hmm. So brings us closer to our long-range goal of being able to consolidate some of our services into a single platform, as well as reducing our server footprint in the district and our costs that go along with that. So you may notice that the support for Skyward is a little bit more than it would be for a power school, but I think that given that we now wouldn't have to support all of the external, all the extra servers and the time that goes along with it, the cost would kind of offset itself. You had to go with a different product, whether it's PowerSchool or something else, where we would have to house that on a separate server. Mm-hmm. These products can also be a portal in for our community and for our parents to be able to see their students' attendance, the discipline record, as well as their grades. So it's also a nice tie-in with our community as well to be able to provide that. Right now we have a portal that brings them in to see the students' grades, and right now we have to do some gymnastics to get their attendance in there, but we do get it in there. Mm-hmm. But there's quite a bit of scripting and data pulls that have to go on in order to get all of these other corresponding systems to work with it. Going with something like a Skyward product would allow us to be able to pull a lot of these services in under one platform, hopefully lowering our support for them as well. Our recommendation is to go with Skyward. We'll be bringing this to the board on the 6th for discussion and then on the 20th for action. Any questions?
How many years do you expect to use this?
How many years do we expect to use it?
License per year, it looks like.
All of them are licensed per year. You get into a relationship like this, it's kind of like a marriage. You hope it lasts forever. But you don't want to have to jump from one system to the other because it contains so many core components, particularly data-driven decisions that are made with the use of the software. So certainly, ideally, once you make the decision, you plan on using this product indefinitely.
Mm-hmm. I was just looking at, looks like, I guess, the three-year is your break-even, and then power school becomes cheaper, but it sounds like you're more interested in the fact that it's a single platform.
Right, and I think that will also lower costs for support and overhead. We wouldn't have to replace the additional servers for a different, whether it's PowerSchool or something else, mm-hmm. as well as the man hours it takes, even on a daily basis, to check those servers, troubleshoot them, server licensing for those extra servers. Those all compound as well.
Mm-hmm. Does the first-year investment, that's just the software, that doesn't include the...
That's everything. That's implementation, that's everything. The only thing that does not include would be the server, and I think I included that as an additional cost.
Yeah, $6,800.
Right. Mm-hmm. Skyward's been doing school student and finance for over 30 years in the state of Illinois. They have been keeping abreast, and this is a fully 100% web-based function. It's not a, so they've actually moved it all to the web over time. So it's
the cloud.
No, it's not cloud.
Yeah, we wouldn't put it on a cloud, but it is web-based.
When parents log in, it's via their web browser.
Right, or even within the district, it's through the web browser.
So when Amazon services went down, these guys don't host or do anything on Amazon.
Right. I mean, for something like this, a lot of services we will look to move to a cloud, maybe for storage purposes or that sort of thing. But with data that's as critical as this, I'm mm-hmm. not comfortable at this point putting that out to a third-party vendor.
Mm-hmm. I know we've had problems with STERS, especially in the last couple of years, and also the concern about them not being able to keep up with the changing needs we've had, too. So I in your long-range plan, Mike, you talked about wanting to scale to one platform, you know, to be able to do things. So this, you know, it certainly makes sense. You might have already answered this question, but I want to ask it anyway. Will this, the Skyward system, allow for teachers to have more ease of use in terms of putting in grades, et cetera? I mean, how does that work?
Well, right now we're not going to use it as our grade book.
So it's only going to be student. We're going to keep Pinnacle. Yeah.
Right. I mean, teachers would still access it for things like attendance.
Right.
But for grades, and that's something that we will look at down the road.
Mm-hmm. So it has the capability.
Skyward does do standards based
for applications. Yeah.
It does. Okay. But we did not take a real close look at that at this point since we've just adopted.
Right. Not a good idea to switch. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Well, I was just going to add to that it also has a data warehousing component. Mm-hmm. That's something else that we never really.
I was going to ask about that because we've talked a lot about data warehousing and wanting to have a.
Right, and it's something we never really could realize with SIRS. We have our own data warehouse, it's our own home developed database with an interface, but we, again, have to push and pull data back and forth. So mm-hmm. that would be something else that we could explore down the road to see if we can consolidate all of that under one platform.
Mm-hmm. Do they provide training as well?
Mm-hmm. Yes, they do. And that's also included in that initial purchase.
Well, the training for that the finance and human resources departments have gone through over the last 2 years with Skyward has been excellent.
They've been a great vendor to work with. They have a long history here in the state of Illinois, and they seem to be getting stronger mm-hmm. in a lot of areas. Mike has had difficulties with the current software package.
Yeah.
As well as having a strong support group of other districts that are currently using mm-hmm. the same platform.
What happens with upgrades?
Upgrades come regularly, and we're very accustomed to doing them with a finance system at this point. I have not, aside from a couple hiccups at the very beginning, and that was mostly, I think, due to my own learning curve and learning how to do the updates with the new software.
Mm-hmm.
But since then, I've not had one issue with the updates.
There's no fee for their.
That's the other piece. It's built
the
in, yeah.
For the
right,
mm-hmm.
right. And, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I didn't mean that. I was just curious, does this take care of some of the headaches we've had with the Hadley scheduling?
Well, I hope so.
That's part of the exploration that we did throughout. Mike had a very large committee working on this in terms of end users and people here to help discover which product had the greatest capacity for all of the end users. So we hope it has. I mean, we believe it'll do better than what we currently experience.
Right. And with scheduling, nobody's going to tell you it's going to schedule 100% of your students, but given the feedback I had gotten from other districts that are using it for scheduling, they've all been happy with the results. It works. It's not going to schedule 100%, and we may have to kind of look at some of the ways that we schedule. But it also offers an offload feature that we don't currently have. So mm-hmm. a lot of cases what districts will do is they'll spreadsheet out partial schedule. So maybe they'll just do their electives, or maybe they'll just do the core classes. And once they have that set, then they'll upload that into the software, and you've got that done. And then the software can run through its auto scheduler, and you have a better chance of getting a more complete schedule.
So and they're on 15-minute blocks.
Nobody can find actually does that. But
we have a complicated schedule. There's no question about that.
Yeah.
But I mean, in our interviewing with them and meetings with Hadley, they didn't seem daunted by our schedule either, you know, and it seemed to have answers for many of the questions that were asked.
And we did do a separate demo just for the Hadley staff, just centering around scheduling.
Hmm.
So I think we got all of the questions answered, but without actually seeing it do it, there aren't going to be any guarantees. I think there's always going to be a little bit of labor that goes along with the schedule, given the kind of schedule that we have at the junior high. But I think at least if we're not dealing with just hiccups or bugs in the system that kind of derail you all on their own without having the work to do that is involved with the schedule, I think that's a huge relief and benefit for the staff there.
Yeah.
It saves a lot of time and man-hours.
Well, they hand-scheduled.
Yes, they did.
Downstairs.
They still do.
For weeks. And they're still doing it now. The other day I saw it.
Right.
We got to deal with that.
There's a cost component.
The person hours involved with that is ridiculous.
Yeah. Well,
Because it's taking them off other stuff.
Correct. Well,
that's what we're hoping this new software will.
Will this eliminate the need for the contractor that we have to help with some of our systems, or is that separate?
That's a separate. What we have that contractor doing is she does manipulate a lot of the data that's in the current system, but we've got many other sources that need that data. Things like the map testing data comes from that. The data warehouse data comes from that. Data that goes back and forth from the gradebook data comes from that. These are all scripts and day-to-day maintenance that has to be kept up, and that's just a few of the dozens of things that we use.
Mike, I have a couple of different questions. It appears to me, are you proposing a conversion from the current system to the proposed system?
Correct.
What are you anticipating in terms of disruption in the process of conversion?
Well, we'll have a timeline set out. It's not in stone yet, but the way we're looking at it right now is by fall, once the dust settles for the summer, by fall we can start really looking at what's going to be involved in the conversion. The conversion can take weeks, even months in some cases, to take your existing data, pull it out, have them start to convert it or manipulate it to fit into their database. So we'll probably go back and forth, and this will be completely offline. It wouldn't affect anybody here. When we finally make the cutover, and right now we're tentatively looking at possibly the holiday break, the Christmas break, to make this cutover, then it's kind of a hard cut. And you try to bring all of your services in, then you've got your core staff that's already trained, and they would have been trained, say, through October, November. So when they come back from the break, they've at least had the training, and they'll be up to speed. I mean, there will be a learning curve going through the back end of the school year, but the system will be in place. The Hadley staff will be able to begin the schedule for next year's schedule for on the new system rather than using CERS. So the idea is not to have any disruption in service or downtime, but there's always going to be a little bit of a learning curve whenever you take on a new software like this.
Is there a limit in terms of their support in the conversion process? Do they allow X amount of hours to complete the conversion?
Well, it's built in. They didn't base it on an hourly basis. It's just kind of a conversion process. So the conversion time is already built into the quote. How much time is spent supporting it afterwards? Well, we're already paying this annual support before that. So
okay.
If we have issues come up down the road, we're just going to use their support avenue like we always have.
I can tell you I'm involved with conversions at different banks in my history. And converting a processor, the main processor, is a daunting task.
It can be. And that one of the benefits of Skyward is when we move to the finance system, it's about the smoothest conversion I've ever gone through.
I was just going to say finance.
The project management was very good. It was very detailed. We met or spoke weekly to stay on top of it. So it's one of the reasons I selected Skyward.
Now, Skyward will integrate and migrate back and forth across other platforms and other systems that you're currently using?
Yeah, I mean, we'll be able to pull data just like we do now, and a lot of that will still go on. A lot of that work where we've got a script or pull data from that database and push it out to other systems, that will still go on, and yes, it will. And that's one of the other topics we discussed in detail is how we do that.
In terms of what have you done in terms of backups and in terms of what is Skyward's capacity in terms of
data retention?
Well, data. An incident, a catastrophic incident that would affect the server? Do they have a backup at a remote location?
It's on our server.
Right. What we do is we run a nightly backup, and it's backed up to two different locations. What happens is we've got the server with Skyward on it, That server is backed up on a nightly basis. It runs its own routine. It takes the entire database from Skyward and dumps it to another server that's here. Then we have another server backup routine that takes that backup, pushes it out to Hadley. So we've got a backup here, and we have a backup at Hadley.
We have a generator here.
But if Skyward went down, what is their disaster recovery protocols, I guess?
Well, does that impact us?
Yeah, and they're not going to provide us with a disaster recovery protocol. That's our responsibility. And what we do is we do back everything up on a nightly basis. And in the case of a catastrophic failure to that server, we could move everything to another server, at least in the meantime. We don't have a redundancy in place right now where things get backed up to Hadley. It is something that I'd like to do within the next several years, but we don't have that right now. There would be some downtime where we'd have to push things to another server just to get services back up and running, and then we would have to order another server or have the existing server repaired.
So you'll own Skyward, and it'll reside within your own server. It's not going to go.
They lease Skyward.
Yeah, we leased it.
We lease the software, but the hardware is ours.
Okay, so it's not, you're not going back and forth to their...
No.
Okay.
We're not at this point. We're not backing up off-site like to their storage. Some places do offer that as an option. We take care of our own backup and recovery.
Okay.
I don't think a school district has quite the same uptime needs as a bank.
No, I understand.
What it is important, but...
When
they can't check their grades, I think you could wait till tomorrow.
Even if they do.
And then my only other two questions really revolve around in terms of your investigation in terms of this vendor, how long they've been around, what other comments with other clients that are on that system, and are assuming that all that's positive, mm-hmm. and you believe that this vendor, based on their profile and status in terms of technology, can grow as we grow.
Correct.
Okay.
And that is one of the things that I really look at, particularly with a product like this, is how established is the company. How established is the software? What's the user base look like? How much of the market share do they have? Those all were big components for me when I even just initially looking at products. So that had already been established before we even decided to bring them in. It's a better for us.
And then Mike sent out a call to users of the software across the country, really, focused in Illinois, but across the country where Skyward is used, and PowerSchool, and so people sent in their comments to us, and the whole committee was able to review mm-hmm. those comments that we got from other users.
And I still have those if you care to see them. Yeah.
Did your due diligence?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Best we could. Bob, did you look at the company from a financial standpoint?
I love the company.
Okay.
I've got no complaints regarding Skyward out of me.
Mm-hmm. They hire a lot of retired administrators.
I don't know.
But they know what they're selling. I'm mm-hmm. saying they're actual users.
Well, you know what's nice? It's a small family-held operation. They're located, I believe, in Wisconsin.
Stevens Point, Wisconsin.
In Wisconsin. The president, vice president, a lot of the upper management are all part of the same family. They've been doing this for 30 years, and as I've said, as Mike has indicated, we have purchased the finance software as well as the human resource software. We did look at them for the food service. We decided to go in another route with regards to the food service. So they have a number of programs that are specifically geared towards school districts, and this is just another sort of branch of their operation, and I believe in it wholeheartedly.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Bob.
Okay, moving on. The next order of business then is the Glenbart Area Property Tax Appeals Cooperative and the Intergovernmental Agreement. We got together, and as part of our ongoing efforts to look at streamlining costs, savings costs among shared services of school districts. This is just another area that was identified as a possible area to save the school districts, the area school districts, some funds. A few months ago, we brought this a recommendation on this intergovernmental agreement to the Finance Committee for review. We heard a number of questions that were asked, and I hopefully have we've provided, or I have been able to provide responses to those questions that you've asked. So I'll just give a brief summary of what's occurring here. There are currently three districts that are interested in forming this cooperative, 41, 87, and 89, which are all essentially Glen Ellyn school districts. 87 and 89, their boards have already approved and signed this agreement.
Unanimously?
Pardon me?
Their boards unanimously approved these? Did they vote?
I've got signed agreements. Yeah. They voted, and I have signed agreements.
Yeah. You could just check. I'm pretty sure it was unanimous.
You know, Steve, I've got to be honest with you. When I went back to each of the assistant superintendents and asked them, had they had any controversy or questions come up, and they said it was a non-issue in our district.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But we can get the minutes, the votes for the minutes, if that's important.
And I can make mention of it when I provide an updated board report. So, what's going to occur is there are two levels of review that a property tax owner has the ability to appeal their valuation for tax purposes. They can take it to the board, the DuPage County Board of Review. And if that's not sufficient, if that doesn't address their concerns, they can then take it to the Property Tax Appeal Board, and then the Board of Review to a state level. There'll be set up where there'll be a committee of three, myself and two other assistant superintendents, will act as a committee determining essentially what will or what won't be, shall we say, appealed. Although there are pretty standard rules that are established in this intergovernmental agreement, we will not protest the appeal of a residential property tax owner, and we will only protest property tax appeals that are greater than $1.5 million at the DuPage County Board of Review and $900,000 worth of fair market value at the Property Tax Appeals Board. The cost associated with this agreement would be the normal and customary cost associated with any appeal that we would be associated with, whether it be attorney's costs, the services of an appraiser, just those different types of professional fees. And the nice thing is that we, as an individual district, won't be burdened with those responsibilities, those financial responsibilities individually, but rather we'll split them as a whole, and they'll be split pro rata. This would essentially affect District 87 and 41 here, so we would share those costs on a pro rata basis. Mm-hmm. So we believe it's a good arrangement to make in our governmental agreement with our two other member districts here in the community, and we feel as though it also provides for a good level of protection to the residential property tax owner.
Originally,
seven total school districts.
They were asked if they declined to participate. They have their own attorneys. So it's just really the three districts that are here located predominantly in the Glen Ellyn area.
Does 89 also use Francis?
No. Yes, for property tax appeals.
Okay.
Francis will be the attorney that will process all the appeals, and they will represent the three of us in any one particular appeal.
Bob, mm-hmm. There were two things you mentioned when this was originally brought up, and I know there were a whole series of questions, and thank you for detailing all of this because it's helpful again. And one is that it makes sense in a common sense way because we're dealing with some of the same property anyway. And the other thing, you said, I think, was that we're already doing this in an informal way where you have conversation with the other assistant superintendents when these issues come up, if they come up, to see if they're impacted and leveraging.
That's correct.
So this formalizes it, I guess.
This formalizes standard operating procedures that occur in my office.
Right.
We appeal, not appeal, but if a property value, if a owner of a piece of property, if their value or the value of their protest exceeds a certain threshold, we're going to protest that assessment, and then we work through the, you know, evaluation process. Mm-hmm. And generally speaking, about 6 or 8 weeks ago, I brought to you a request to intervene at two pieces of property mm-hmm. located along North Avenue, mm-hmm. and we're working in cooperation with District 87 in resolving those issues.
Mm-hmm. I also appreciate the last page, which is this Exhibit A, the parameters for intervention.
And some changes. That's a change. That represents a change from the first time you saw it.
Exactly. So that was a nice addition. And I know that, again, there was some response from some community members about residential property concerns, and I see that that's built in specifically. You just said it. It's in the
document.
It's in the exhibit. So I just want to, you know, put that on record, because I know that we had some concerns about that. So thank you for putting this exhibit together.
We will not go after residential property.
To me, it's really just finding the true value of the property. Mm-hmm. It's just providing two sides of an argument.
Right.
Because anyone protesting is going to come in with a real low appraisal, and we'll get another appraisal.
Right.
And it really just finds the true property. So I don't see how anyone can be concerned in the district about it, because mm-hmm. if there are a lot of people that have the resources to go and fight their appeals, it just pushes the burden onto other people.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's not necessarily, in a previous life, in a business that I was in, we owned a lot of different pieces of property, and we used to appeal these on an ongoing basis, and there's a lot of attorneys that make a lifetime of earnings. They go in, they represent these folks, and what they do is they typically receive one-third of the first year savings.
Mm-hmm.
So they're working pro bono until they actually receive the reduction in values.
Mm-hmm.
So this is just a normal course of us doing our, as we normally would operate, and it provides a level of protection to residential property tax owners.
Bob, if someone, I guess, protested and it dropped by this threshold, what would that mean in terms of dollars to the district?
Well, you would take the equalized assessed valuation times whatever our tax rate is. That's what the implications were. And I think someone asked me that question.
I asked for a specific example. How it got.
And it was somewhere between $45,000 and $55,000 in taxes if they were to receive a particular reduction from what their current level
is.
Is
that for the 1.5%?
It depends on your tax rate.
Yeah,
it depends what you're protesting. And again, these are only protests of previous years.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I guess I'm just trying to understand why, you know, where is $1.5 million coming from?
I would say that it's a threshold that makes it economically justifiable for us to fight that level or protest that level of assessment. If there's a certain threshold in there, and we as a group, as well as with the attorneys, have determined, you know, it really doesn't make a lot of sense to fight these unless it's $1.5 million at the DuPage level and $900,000 at the state level. So that's just it's a figure that we thought was the most appropriate at this point in time to institute with regards to this particular intergovernmental agreement.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the other question I had was, you know, the anticipated savings because of the forming this cooperative.
Well, I will tell you that this is how we currently operate. All mm-hmm. this is doing is formalizing it. So mm-hmm. the protests, you know, I've been in the district now for 4 years. The protests that we fought, we've essentially shared costs with such as District 87. When we went through the comment appeal process, we covered 5 years, fellas,
mm-hmm.
covered 5 years and took 3 or 5 years to resolve.
Mm-hmm.
The bill was, I can't say for sure, but I'm going to say it was probably $30,000 over a number of years.
Right. What we're saying, I mean, like Bob has said, we're doing this now. This is just formalizing it. We have to pay 100% of their fee versus now we've only been paying a prorated amount of their fee because we're sharing the cost. I mean, so since we've been doing it this way,
we share the same attorneys. Should we switch attorneys, or should District 87 switch attorneys? And as I mentioned, 89 uses a different attorney, another firm, for their general business, we would be paying the full cost of that service ourselves. We could, I mean, potentially fall into that situation if we don't enter into this agreement, mm-hmm. because we're now formalizing an agreement that if we don't formalize, you know.
Or we'd have to take action on each individual project.
Which is redundant.
You don't have to do that. We've got an agreement in place to standard look at them.
We'd be going back to that resolution.
And for each one, we could come and say we don't want to specifically do it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't bind us to, for a specific property to do it either.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it makes sense to do it.
It's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to see if it's going to generate savings like some of your other cooperative.
It'll maintain our savings.
Yes. Okay.
And cut down on more board action on individual.
Yeah.
Again, this is something that my office does day in and day out, or as often as we receive these mm-hmm. protests.
Yeah, I asked Tom Bocaglio about it. He just shook his head. He didn't understand why anyone would not.
No, mm-hmm. I think it makes all the
yeah.
sense of the world.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
Thanks, Bob.
Then the next order of business this evening will be the resolution of the Board of Education directing the school treasurer to loan monies from the working cash fund to the transportation fund. Briefly, what's occurred is you know that the state has withheld certain financing from districts all over the state of Illinois for a number of programs. Currently, the state owes District 41 approximately $336,000 for regular and special education transportation. If you were to review, or when you do review your finance packets in there, I give a summary of fund balances. You'll notice that there's approximately $110,819,000 remaining in the transportation fund. We've estimated expenditures for the remainder of the year total about $388,000. So what we're requesting the Board of Education to allow the administration to do would be to transfer, or not to transfer, but rather approve a one-time loan of $388,000 from the working cash fund to the transportation fund. Now, over the next several months, we levied $800,000 in the transportation fund. Between the months of June and September or October, we would expect to receive about $800,000 in that levy cycle. From property tax. That's exclusive of any other income that's generated in that fund. We would expect to pay this interfund loan back to the working cash fund probably in September, and we would do this just as a normal course of doing business. So what we're looking for is for the Board of Education to allow us to transfer from the working cash fund to the transportation fund $388,000. We would like to bring this to the board for action. Excuse me, for discussion on June 6th and action on June 20th. And again, this is the result of us not having received what we have been allocated in terms of transportation funds. Or excuse me, funds in general, but specifically the transportation fund.
Mm-hmm. When do you have to? When do you expect to pay those expenditure bills?
We will pay. We'll pay them every month: April, May, June, and July.
I'm just wondering if you got enough time. I guess if it doesn't get approved till June 20th.
Well, we only have $110,000 left, and we believe that we will exhaust or run this fund into a deficit with the next round of bills.
By the end of the fiscal year, that would make that account whole, as mm-hmm. opposed to a deficit account.
You know, we're going to get tax payments.
Plus, as you mentioned, the state requires that money is paid back out of your tax.
The state requires, yes, right. they require that within 1 year of the date of loan, it has to be paid back. And also, it specifically calls, I believe, Section 20-5 requires us to pay it back with the next receipt of tax revenues.
Right. Yeah. So it's the built-in process in terms of the payback. Yeah.
And it's. I don't think it would be appropriate or prudent, from my perspective as a school district treasurer, to allow a particular fund to run a deficit when we have funds available in other funds. And the working cash fund is sort of our savings account. Mm-hmm. It's specifically designed for this type of use. So we've checked with the attorneys. They put together a quick resolution for mm-hmm. us, and we feel as though this is the most appropriate recommendation to make at this time to keep this fund solid.
Okay. Yep.
So we think they're going to come through with it eventually, just delayed as usual?
Well, what we've heard is that during next fiscal year, we will receive three payments. So we would expect sometime next year, whether it's fall or winter, to receive that additional $336,000. I don't know if that's going to occur, but we expect it to happen.
The future budgeting will have to be amended to not count on the state funding.
If that occurred, we would have to make changes to the budget.
Well, that's what I think I've been hearing in those legislative updates, is they're looking at taking a whack at the transportation. Mm-hmm.
They did a huge, they cut a huge amount out of it.
Mm-hmm. So, Bob, are you building in, if I'm reading this right, are you building in $110,000 cushion?
We have always had substantially more than that in terms of a cushion. This is one of the lowest points that this fund has had in a number of years, and it's the first time in my years here of four. Phyllis, have you ever made an interfund loan or transfer? So Phyllis has been here 8 years. This has never happened before, and it's a direct result of the state of Illinois not upholding its end of the bargain, its agreements. It's simply not, it's not paying. It doesn't have the money to pay items that have been budgeted to a particular district.
We've done their own transfers. We just
haven't used working cash.
Because inter-fund transfers. Yes. Right. Inter-fund transfers, like when we had the segregated general fund.
That's
something similar, but that was an inter-fund transfer. We permanently transferred money from one fund to another fund.
Okay.
You can only loan money from the working cash fund to other funds, and it has to be paid back within a certain period of time.
That's
the difference between the two.
Okay.
And that was a result of going from the general, well, we were on separated funds, segregated funds, then we went to the general fund, and we went back, and then we went back to the segregated funds. We had to make those calculations in terms of what should be divided amongst the various segregated funds.
But, I mean, a lot of districts do this every year.
A lot of districts do it all the time. We haven't been in this position.
If the state had a structural deficit in terms of what they're going to do for transportation, would we then on the rate reallocation sheet somehow set it up so
you can only,
the rate in transportation started to...
You can only go up to what you originally levied. So
okay.
We can't all of a sudden add another $300,000 to that levy request that we never originally asked for.
Or something. Yeah.
No, we can't.
Okay.
If we levied $800,000, you can only reallocate up to the $800,000. You can't all of a sudden say, oh, I should have had that be $1.1 million
okay.
and move it. I mean, you can only reallocate up to what you originally levied for. So, and we did do that with the reallocation. We shifted money. We made sure that the transportation fund would be reallocated back to get the full $800,000.
I think we reallocated an additional 26.5 or something like that because when they came back with the sheets in March, it was about 26,000 less.
Right.
So we reallocated that back to the fullest, to the greatest extent we could. And next year we'll look at the levy again to see if we can tweak it to put some more money in the transportation.
That's what I meant.
Right.
Yeah. When we do our initial
right at each levy in that reallocation sheet, we can kind of move a little.
Yeah. That's correct.
The total levy amount won't change, but where your accounting goes for
right.
the funds, you can,
right.
like you can only, tweak a little bit.
But you can only reallocate up to the maximum amount that you originally levied for.
Okay.
In that
so fund. If you don't plan to levy $1.1 million in that fund, you can't, and you only levy $800,000, you can't all of a sudden reallocate
right.
in the spring. Mm-hmm. To get to
the
$1.1 million.
Yeah, it's capped.
You're talking about
reallocation after you've levied.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about changing your levy the following year in order to be adequately funded.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So
and knowing that we don't have to do this every year, we're going to say,
correct.
Let's set up transportation
correct.
So it doesn't rely on the state, and we use what we
right.
our ad valorem taxes to cover it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's what I would look at when I bring the levy to the board at Finance Committee and the board in October, November.
And it's a little bit of a guessing game because until we know what the state is going to do,
right.
you don't want to over-levy in your transportation.
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, the right. idea has always been to keep as many dollars as we can in the education.
Yeah. yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. With our new transportation bid, we're expecting that expenditure to drop. Was it 280?
Yeah, $260,000, mm-hmm. I believe, and that's already incorporated into the budget.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I saw that.
Which we had a deficit going if we had not gotten that that bid at such a substantially reduced rate, even with the full levy and even anticipating revenues from the state, we still would have been in a deficit situation. So this was a great thing to happen at just the right time for us because it left that transportation fund solid. So the reduction that we received when we went out to bid for regular transportation, and then Case also went out to bid. They use Septran, and their rates came back at about 3% less. So that's been incorporated in the budget presentation also.
I'm all in favor for this. I just want to make sure that in the budgeting process that we make an adjustment so in terms of the budget that we're not counting on this money from the state.
I've taken a good 25% out of next year's budget in terms of state revenue in the transportation fund.
In the budgeting process, is it detailed enough to go line by line to be able to tie that back to the 388 on the budget?
No.
Okay.
I mean, what we do is we know what it costs. What it costs us to write a check to, let's say, First Student every month, and it's about $100,000, right, fellas? It's about $100,000, and then there's other expenditures that flow through that account. So we made it. We just went out and projected. Okay, we've got X number of days left in this particular year. What do we think the cost will be? And we expect them to be around $388,000 to give us some cushion. Because I don't want to have to come back to you in September or October and then request an additional transfer. I wanted to make this transfer now to keep the fund solid, to keep it whole, until that receipt of property taxes come in and until we get that revenue stream back from the state.
I'm in favor for this. I just think in terms of the budgeting process, maybe we need to ratchet the number back a little bit more from what we're anticipating from the state and what we're not anticipating.
Well, we'll take a look at it. Now, I just want to caution the board that we receive only about $25,000 reimbursement in the form of regular transportation, and it's, Phyllis, about $300,000 for special education transportation. Mm-hmm. So we receive very little with regards to regular student, regular transportation.
And we've already taken that down.
We've already ratcheted that down. I think last year it was $40,000. This year I pulled it back to $25,000, and we made a corresponding reduction in special ed transportation.
And maybe just, I was thinking this is special education, but maybe ratchet that even more.
I'll take a look at it.
I look at the 388, and I'm thinking, I'm getting nervous about that. So
I understand.
If you could just take a look at that, please.
Absolutely. Any other questions?
So there are, just to summarize, there's four pieces here that the board will take action on the 20th.
We'll see at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
So it'll be the fifth one.
5, 6.
The board will have a discussion.
On the 6th. Yeah. And then on the 20th, action.
And actually 7, because the budget also is action on the 20th, which so can be put on display. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? Okay, then we have two other items on the agenda this evening. Really, I just wanted to give you an update in terms of the tentative budget. Dan, you asked us to come back and talk about it the last time we spoke about it at the Finance Committee of a whole. If you'll notice, there has been about, the budget itself has not changed much. There's about a $35,000 reduction in the expected surplus. It went from about $638,000 to $603,000. And really what's changed in there is I allocated, there's an additional request that came from the Hadley Theater Arts Group, and we've included additional funding to that group this year. And then I've also included additional funding for the purchase of furniture and fixtures for what we would be bringing back to the board in terms of a presentation of the model classroom at the elementary schools. So essentially, it has remained the same, except I have included $35,000 in additional expenditure. And then also, we were asked to go back and just verify the numbers that were highlighted in the staffing reports and the various function reports that we provided. Those have been updated to have the most accurate information, both for last year and this year, as we know it today. Changes that occurred basically were the staffing for special education, and then UIT requested that we put a number in there for staff that would be dedicated to food service, which we've also done. It changed numbers in terms of what our costs were because that was already built into our model, but it did provide for additional staffing in as a result of the changes that we've made. So not much of change. Obviously, this is the second meeting of May. The intention is to bring this back to the board for presentation and an authorization for us to post the budget at the second meeting in June. We'll request your approval to post the budget, and then we will bring it back to the board. We'll give you 60 days for the public, the community, and the board to review, and then we'll bring it back to the board for approval at the second meeting in August. Are there any questions that I might be able to answer at this time regarding this budget? Again, it's very similar to what's been presented previously, just a couple of additional expenditures that were added.
The only thing is, I haven't had a chance to look at this in detail, but thank you for those updates. But one thing we had kind of talked about was having the line item that shows the dollar amount that we need to meet the fund balance. And I know that we started that conversation mm-hmm. in January with the intention. I know at that time we had said to finish it up in April. Now we got new member on board, so Sam has a chance to be a part of that conversation. I would like us to have that conversation here in the next couple weeks mm-hmm. so that we can include that on the budget before it goes out.
Help me with that line item again. The line item that includes the fund balance.
Well, this is where we, in the budget we say our target of
mm-hmm.
whatever it is, 35%, and then there's a line item that just says.
Oh, what percentage of that target?
Or what dollar this,
This dollar represents.
This dollar represents
a percentage.
Meeting that.
I gotcha. Okay.
To that target.
Yeah. Yeah, we did talk about that.
Mm-hmm. And I'll provide that. I'll try to get that. I will get that created, and I'll bring it back as a quick item for review at the next finance meeting.
And we'll bring that at percentage at 30%. Is that?
Well, we have to finish that.
We have not. That's why it's difficult to put. We can do what it currently is. It is a percentage of, as opposed to a percentage of a limit or something.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I can tell you what it would add to approximately at the end of the fiscal year, given these set of circumstances. It would be appropriate then for the board to have that level of conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to caution you also, we've already begun to plan for 2012 in terms of capital projects. And there are a number of issues that we'll start to bring forward late summer, next fall, in terms of what the plans are going forward.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to make you aware of that. Wilson parking lot and things like that. A lot of very high ticket items are starting to come up out there. First of all, a lot of our roofs and our parking lots are now at 13, 14 years old,
mm-hmm.
15 years old, some of them. That's sort of the expected life between 15 and 20 years. They kind of run the gamut. But this weather has really taken a beating in a lot of our facilities that are exposed to the elements on an ongoing basis. Roofs and parking lots are a major concern to me as we move forward.
Mm-hmm. Dan, I also think we have, because I was looking through our policy stuff, that fund balance statement that we had come up with. I think we had some language that we were playing with. I don't know if you still have that, Bob.
We
amended that policy, but we didn't have any language that talked about a min.
The percentage.
Yeah, we have a min,
right.
A minimum, but we don't have a maximum.
Right.
And I don't believe
that.
I don't believe we established any language for that.
We didn't. We just had this the basic policy language that started, you know, initiated the conversation.
And yeah, we do have a policy.
Right.
That was in place. We updated it.
Right.
We just didn't finish it.
Right.
And I think that's been a good 3 years since we put that policy and the revisions in place.
So just so I'm clear, we're talking about the reserves here?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And so if the board chose to revisit the percentages, then we would have to schedule a discussion on it? Is that where we're going here?
That's what I'm trying to get at. I'd like to say, I think this is an appropriate time since we're getting ready to put the budget out there to close it out rather than punt it for another year.
So you're saying a time to determine what that maximum
right.
is?
Right.
I would suggest that because of our agendas for the next two meetings, that discussion probably should be a finance committee of the whole, perhaps, so that the discussion takes place here rather than at a board meeting, or schedule maybe a separate board meeting to have that discussion, because that will be a lengthy discussion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't have a problem with the finance committee.
Mm-hmm. What does your finance agenda look like for the next two meetings?
After June.
Because we don't meet in July.
Right.
So.
Finance agenda is we've got a number of items this evening, which I needed to do just to sort of get the process rolling and get everything cleared before we go for July. We can certainly start to have those conversations. I just imagine it being a couple hour conversation, so I don't know if we a workshop, if we whatever, however we, if it straddles two board meetings. So we can start, I don't know how much work I can give you, let's say prior to June 6th, but I can start to set things up so you have some baseline information to take a look at and make the adjustments or the calculations that you've asked to be included in this budget. I can do that for June 6th, put it back on the agenda, and mm-hmm. we can just start to talk about it.
Yeah, and my guess is that we don't know what information the board would like us to provide at this point. I mean, so I would think that if there's a discussion that takes place on June 6th, it is board discussion, trying to get at what's important, what are the values that the board has around that, what's a maximum balance you'd like to see us maintain for healthy financial standing. And
when this conversation was initiated, you know, I'm thinking
a long time ago,
at least a year ago, I did do some research with neighboring districts. You had given me some suggestions on that, so I do have that complement of information.
And we also have
a spreadsheet.
And we have a spreadsheet.
We have
right.
a spreadsheet that we put together right. last year with
about
regard to the fund balance.
That's what I'm remembering, that we have documentation. We have the policy, mm-hmm. but we have a documentation to move us to this more detailed level of conversation to talk about.
And it will require.
Is there something else you'd want to see by
joining? No, I'm just not sure what else. I mean, we've already got a lot of information. I just like, I think it would be appropriate for us to mm-hmm. finish that out.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And apply it to this upcoming budget.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And that data.
Okay.
Right,
729. We're at the end of our meeting. The final order of business tonight is the 2011 third quarter financial results. Go ahead, take a look at it. It's a presentation that we've been making to the finance committee for the past couple of years. If you have any questions, give me a call or shoot me an email, and I'll do my best to address them. But this is pretty much standardized information mm-hmm. that the finance committee has received and will continue to receive on a quarterly basis.
I mean, the only anomaly I see is tuition
mm-hmm.
up 25%.
We had some extraordinary
yeah.
circumstances this year.
Right.
Yeah.
That we can't really budget for that.
You know what? We can't really budget for it. We do our best estimate at it, and then it's kind of a roll of the dice in terms of where we end up. So it is 7:30, and that will conclude this evening's meeting of the Finance and Facilities Committee.